You're listening to the Tilehurst End Podcast by Reading fans for Reading fans.
Hello and welcome to the Tilehurst End Podcast with a very special edition for this March international break. We thought we'd take a trip down memory lane, and boy, have we got a lot of memories to cover tonight. I'm your host, Mark Merriam. Before I introduce the man himself, I'll throw over to my partner in crime, Mark Obada. Thank you very much for helping organise this tonight and for being with me for this interview.
Yes, thank you, Mark. And yeah, like always, a pleasure.
And joining us tonight, a man who joined Reading back in 1992, and he hung around for a little bit as well, because hopefully he thought it was a decent place. The man is Phil Parkinson. Phil, how are you tonight?
Yeah, very good, thank you. Very good.
Brilliant. And as I said, it's just in case we need a rundown, as Phil joining in 1992, well over 300 appearances for the club, leaving in 2003, voted later on to be the best central midfielder in Reading's best ever 11, along with numerous other awards. And we'll start tonight by bringing it all the way back to the beginning then. And Phil, you started your career with Bury back in the 80s after a academy stint with Southampton, joined Reading in 1992 with the team in the Division 2 or the third tier, I suppose it is, in new money. So what sort of club did you find when you joined Reading then? What sort of quirks remain in your memory from those first few days and weeks at the club?
Obviously it was Mark McGee who signed me, and I remember he called me a couple of days after the season finished when I was at Bury, because my contract was up, and asked if I'd be interested to go down and have a chat. And it kind of took the whole summer to get down there for various reasons, and Reading was sorting a few ins and outs, transfers out, but I finally got down there. And yeah, very much a family orientated club, very well run club. Even though we were at Elm Park at the time, there was still ambition. But yeah, just a club you could tell was going places. Obviously, a young player manager in Mark McGee, who was very ambitious to take the club forward. Sir John Medeski is chairman. Wanted to run the club properly and build a future, and it was great to be a part of that.
Then your friend and former teammate at Reading, Jeff Hopkins, told us during the interview that during the 92-93 season, it was all about the new style of football you were playing on the floor, playing out from the back. Did you have the same impression, and did you think that that would be the future of the game?
Mark and Colin Lee were an excellent managerial partnership and wanted us to play. And we had some good footballers. You know, we're a good football team. I felt we had a good mixture in the team. I think any team has to have the right balance of combinations around the pitch. But yeah, we played some good football. But we worked hard on it on the training pitch to produce that football. And the first year, we missed out, but the second year it all came together.
Yeah, that second year promotion, because obviously you've been part of two promotion teams, and that 1994 year, I suppose maybe this is kind of me being incorrect, but in the annals of Reading history, perhaps that 2002 one is more sort of hugely recognised. There's that Cureton goal, and we talk about that and watch the clips of that and everything. Mm. With the 1994 team, there perhaps isn't that sense of mystique or something. Do you think that's the case, and maybe why do you think that's the case?
Difficult to say, really. Obviously, the club had moved to the Medeski Stadium for the second promotion, which kind of the stature of the club was recognised, starting to get recognised throughout the country because of the infrastructure of the club. And, maybe at the time when we got promoted under Mark, it was probably seen as little old Reading because of the stadium, etc. But it was a good team. We had a really, really good team. And, like we've just said, some of the football we played that year was superb.
And aim is for the following season when Division 1, so you're also playing some fantastic football. McGee left halfway through the season. And became something like a Judas figure in the stands. How did you rate him as a manager and as a person?
Yeah, I've got a lot of respect for Mark McGee. I thought he was excellent. He got the best out of me, certainly. He had a good balance. He knew who was the boss, but he had a good rapport with the players as well. And just kind of like made us really believe in ourselves. And, you know, a lot of the work was done in the recruitment of bringing the right players in. As we know, that is the most crucial thing in any football club. But he really believed in the team and enabled us to play with confidence.
And taking over from him was Mick Gooding and Jimmy Quinn as the former, you know, kind of teammates, but now joint player managers. How does that work as kind of as an atmosphere and going from, you know, being one of the lads effectively to, you know, overseeing everything and having to be a bit of a disciplinarian? How does that work for you, from your perspective?
Yeah, I mean, it was difficult because those two were in the dressing room with us 1 minute, the next minute they're managers. And obviously the joint manager scenario also can cause complications, but they did great and they galvanised the lads and the supporters were really behind us. You know, a little bit of anger around the town because of the way Mark had left, and the club just really pulled together and went on a terrific run.
And where does a 95 playoff final sit in terms of significant moments that impacted your career? As more of a squad player, do you think you were ready to have played in the Premier League at that point?
I mean, I'd like to have had the opportunity to play, you know, have a go in the league. Obviously, I'd missed out on the last part of the season. I'd damaged my cartilage and tried to come back too early and you know, I had to sit out the last few months of the season. But, you know, I'm sure you all remember that it was a year we finished second in the league and they're restructuring the Premiership. But great achievement. You know, if you look back, got promoted and then to finish second in the league, you know, if you equate that to today and, you know, to the clubs you've got up last year, for instance, Coventry and Rotherham and Wickham, all down the bottom of the Championship, you know, we finished second and that was some achievement. And yeah, the division was just as good and just as strong then. And then the Wembley final, you know, will never be forgotten. You know, just such a great occasion, first of all. I think all the lads who were on the coach that day never forget driving up Wembley Way and seeing all the Reading fans around the stadium, and the reception that the coach got was, we all kind of had goosebumps, really. And the lads performed great, but unfortunately it wasn't to be.
Yeah, and you must presume, obviously, you know, sat in the stands, probably maybe, I don't know if you were sat in the dugout or just behind the dugout. How was it for you watching that game unfold? Because I know a lot of people say that footballers watching football, that they're not very good at it and they can't stand it. So for you, how was that as an experience?
Yeah, I mean, I was sat just behind the dugout. If you remember, that the old Wembley had some benches just behind the front. Yeah, I mean, 2-0 up, obviously the penalty miss. And, you know, I always remember because the Bolton fans had been very quiet. You know, it didn't seem such a big occasion for the Bolton fans as it did for Reading because, you know, they'd been to Wembley quite recently. And when we missed the penalty, it lifted the Bolton fans. It was the first time they really started getting behind the team, and it kind of changed the momentum in the game. And obviously the thing at extra time, going on the pitch and trying to get the lads going, but we looked shot to pieces, you know, not just physically, but mentally as well. And it was just hard to pick ourselves up again and go again and finish the job.
And next season with important players like Shaka Hislop, Simon Osborne, Scott Taylor leaving the squad, and the squad suffered a downturn that year, and drew a lot of games and had a couple of memorable club clashes against Man U and Leeds. Reading finished in the end 19th. And how did the club react to its first under par campaign since you had joined the club?
Yeah, I think, you know, you look at it and the second season, if you like, in the new division is always tougher. You know, the first season, you've got the adrenaline, it's new, going to all the different grounds, it's great for supporters. And then finishing second, the expectation levels go up, and add to that with losing key players, And we probably didn't replace them with the quality. It was hard to replace that quality in fairness. And, you know, if you were kind of stood away from it looking in, you'd say, yeah, it would be a season of rebuilding for the club.
Yeah, and in that period as well, you became such a key player. And I wonder what you felt that were the biggest assets that you kind of developed in that period, and what aspects of the game perhaps did you feel like you lacked? How did you feel like your balance in midfield had at the moment at that point?
I mean, my game was, you know, I was a competitive player. I played best when I had a real good footballer alongside me, Kevin Dillon, Darren Caskey, Simon Osborne, those types of players. I felt that was my best. I had a good spell in the team with Mickey Gooden as well, but he was, you know, more industrious, you know, like myself. So, yeah, I enjoyed playing with those real technical players, and I was the player happy to do, you know, win the headers, track runners, win the tackles, do all that side of the game. You know, obviously, particularly under Mark, you know, they said, come on, Phil, you can play. You know, you encouraged me to play as well and got the best out of me that way. But I felt I was at my best when I had the balance of midfield around me, which was a real technical player alongside me.
Mm-hmm. And another year in the doldrums was followed by relegation to the third tier and right when Reading was leaving good old M Park. What mistakes did you feel the club was making at that time?
I mean, obviously Terry Bullivant came in, and you know, I've said many times before the lads had a lot of respect for Terry Bullivant, but again, we, the end of that season, it was a team which was aging a little bit, and we lost again a few key players. And I felt whoever comes in has got a big job on their hands here. And the lads gave everything for Terry. You know, they all, you know, I think Reading prides itself on the teams who play with honesty. But we certainly made sure every week, every training session, we gave everything for Terry. But we just couldn't quite get the results. And then obviously Tommy Burns came in. And we weren't able to stay up, and you know, which was a shame.
Yeah, we'll talk about Tommy Burns in a second, because certainly a really interesting character in Reading history. But as Mark said there, the move from Elm Park to Nadeski was almost like 20th century to 21st century, I suppose. And for you, I wondered what your last memories of Elm Park were and your first memories of the Nadeski were.
Yeah, I mean, more general in terms of overall memories, that my memories of Elm Park now are when we had a night game and we had a good crowd inside the stadium, and what a great atmosphere that old ground could generate. You know, I remember one of my first, either first or second year, we played Fulham on a Friday night. You guys can check this out. I think there was only 7,000-8,000 in there, but just the night games were special at Elm Park, and Jilksy running down the wing in the second half, you know, just lifting the crowd and that time. And then the Medeski Stadium, you know, my first memories of that are a bit of a struggle, because teams came and thought, wow, what a great stadium to play at. The pitch seemed bigger. We couldn't quite get the intensity of our game together in the first year or so. And it was a bit of a struggle at the start. But yeah, Elm Park and Medeski Stadium, I've got some great, great memories. You know, different reasons, very, very different stadiums to play at, but both very special.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you mentioned already Tommy Burns. At the beginning, when he arrived, he played you at centre back, and yeah. Then you were also later on transfer listed along with other long serving players. It was also said that you were close to signing for Wickham. How did you bounce back from that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, like Tommy was another great fella, you know, and, you know, God rest his soul. I love Tommy Burns. His intensity and his desire to do well was right up there, but he didn't have a very good understanding of League One football and what was required. And by the time he'd really got that, it was too late. A lot of the players he'd signed weren't suited to what you need, to how you need to play to get out of League One. Yeah, and you know, obviously, you know, it happens where managers want to move players on, and I nearly left to Wickham. went to see them playing on a Saturday afternoon and came back and obviously discussed it with my wife and everything, and just, you know, wasn't right for me. And, you know, I just felt there's still more football in me left at Reading.
Yeah, absolutely. And I wondered at that period of, as you know, kind of ups and downs and everything, obviously, you know, as you went on to become a manager, was there a sense, you know, what were you kind of almost picking up from these managers and learning from the game at that point that you would then use and interpret to become a manager yourself?
Yeah, well, you know, it is a bit of a cliche, but you do pick up bits from everybody you've played under. And I think that's important, both good and bad. And I think that's the case, really. Every manager I've played under, I've learned from. And you take that with you into your own managerial career.
And during that time, Sir John Badeski put a lot of money into the club as well. And for the first time, it was a bit of a financial powerhouse. How did you get on with Sir John? And how did he change during your time at the club?
I got on very, very well with him. I've got an enormous respect for him. That, you know, Reading, the board of directors, and, you know, Ian Wood Smith, Graham Denton, Sir John Badeski, you know, Nigel Howe was there, you know, as well. I hope I haven't missed anybody out. But there's a lot of the vice presidents, a lot of the people behind the scenes. There was a real strong core of people who ran the club. And just ran it sensibly. Didn't get over emotional when we got B. Let the manager manage. Didn't interfere with the manager too much. And they were very, very good. You know, it was a board full of Reading people, really, who cared about the club. And, you know, bit by bit, the infrastructure of the club, the training ground, etc., gradually improved. And that's what you've got to do in football. You know, you can't run it on emotion and throw multi-millions at it straight away. You've got to put structure in place, and that's what Sir John and his board did, and then the club's still reaping the benefits from that today.
Yeah, one, as you say, throw money at the situation. That one infamous sort of moment was the arrival of the Magnificent Seven and the late signings in that March of that, I think it's the 1999 season. And for you in the dressing room, how hard is it to, because I know quite often you think about, oh, you want to play in a team that you're familiar with, and at the very least, you know what you get out of your teammates, and such an upheaval. How was that for you?
Yeah, I think it's a good point, and really referring back to learning from managers, that if you go back to that season, Tommy Burns came in, he had a real presence about him, and probably all he needed to do was add a bit of freshness into the group in terms of different coaching, slightly few tweaks here, but obviously signing so many players, changing the way we played so much so quickly, had a negative effect. And it was almost like, just kind of do a little bit, don't change it too much. We're not a million miles off being able to stay in the division, and then maybe put your own imprint on it in the summer. And probably in his desire to get us playing a certain way, we probably looked to change it a bit too quickly, and at the time, it didn't really need that.
For all the latest Reading news, analysis and opinion, visit the website at thetilehurstend.com.
And part of them took over after a couple of seasons laboring in Division 2. Did Reading need a fresh approach by then, and what did Parts do to bring that?
Yeah, well, Alan was the first team coach under Terry Bullivan, and was always very impressive. He wasn't always at the games, because quite often he went to watch the opposition, and it was Terry and Alan Harris in the dressing room. But quite often he worked with the players on the training pitch, and he'd have his say, and he had the respect of the lads then anyway. And when the board were looking to make a change, they brought Alan in, and, you know, he brought John Gorman in with him, which I thought was a good appointment at the time. Because John was very, very experienced football man. And yeah, you know, Pards obviously was young, he was hungry, he was determined to do well, and he took his opportunity.
Then next additional question would be, how important, in your point of view, was also the arrival of his assistant, Martin Allen? I remember that Martin told us in an interview, gave us a nice example about tomato soup and the way that the players were used to have tomato soup with every dinner the night before the game. And that from one point to the other, he was just leaving that out and was trying to motivate you and saying, yeah, the next time you win away from home, the first time you do that, you'll get you'll have again your tomato soup. So how important was his arrival?
Well, do you know, my memories of Martin coming in, the at the time we were struggling at home and we were too nice. You know, we were an easy touch to play against, and we needed toughening up a little bit. We needed to have an edge about us, and Martin gave us that. And it was almost like teams were coming to Medeski Stadium and it was a big day for them, fantastic stadium, and they were raising the game and we were making it too easy for them. And Martin kind of, in terms of the opposite of Tommy, knew the division, you know, so well, knew what we needed to do, and got the fundamentals back in place for us, and we started climbing the table.
Well, yeah, and the end of the 2000-2001 season, it was heaven to hell, effectively, but let's focus on the heaven first, and that playoff semi-final win against Wigan. We were speaking to Nicky Forster a few weeks ago, and he was saying about, you know, he was just kind of waiting for the touch and to go down and win the penalty and everything that fell around that. For you, I suppose, perhaps not involved in the attacks, you were more of a, you know, just watching things and praying, I suppose, in a sense. How was how are your memories of that and the atmosphere at the Medeski as well?
Yeah, I mean, both the away game, you know, we had a fantastic travelling army, if you remember that day, and the game was set up. But playoffs are always tense affairs, you know, there's so much at stake. But we had a bit of know-how in the team, and we got over the line, and, you know, deservedly so. And, yeah, Fozzie was Fozzie. You know, if you put the ball in behind the back four, a back four for Fozzie, he'd be onto it. And he used to win a lot of free kicks and fouls because he was just so quick.
Mm. And like Mark already said, 11 days later, you lost the final against Warsaw. Did that defeat hurt more than the one in 95, as you were a senior figure in the team by now?
Yeah, I mean, I think we should have won the game. We were a better side. You know, the pressure was on us a bit, but we could handle that. We had good enough players, and the game should have been over, really. You know, it was a surprise result. A lot of people fancied us to win, but we didn't do the job. You know, we didn't finish the job off, and it was a huge disappointment. And yeah, it took some recovering from that one because you know, we all had the taste of championship football, and we all wanted to get back there.
Yeah, well, I swear every time I see, you know, every time I hear Don Goodman talking about Reading on Sky since then, he's always had that element of smugness about him.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it was another great occasion, played down in Cardiff, and you know, another fantastic arena to play at. But, you know, these places, you know, Wembley and Cardiff, they're only good if you win, and you know, the build-up's good, but you want to win, and unfortunately, we didn't get over the line.
Yeah, and following those two games, kind of bringing it forward a little bit, how have you reacted to the club's two more recent playoff final defeats? Because it's because, you know, after one, it's bad. After two, it's kind of a, you know, it's awful. But after four playoff final defeats, it's a thing now, isn't it? And I suppose maybe later this season we'll be discussing it more. But were you kind of watching those the Swansea and the Huddersfield games, thinking, you know, remembering back to your days?
Yeah, you know, obviously, when a club's gone through defeats, you know, it's obviously a lot worse than get beat in a cup final because your whole next season depends on it, and it can start playing on your mind. But my answer to that is, if Reading get there this season, you know, they're due a win in a playoff final, and you know, if it's this season, you know, they've got to back themselves to beat anybody on the day.
Then the pressure before the final game at Brentford, when you won promotion, was extremely high. Former head of communications Andy West described the emotions at the final whistle then as an enormous relief. And he remembered you sinking. Can you describe what that promotion back to Division One meant to you?
Well, I mean, my son actually brought me a picture of that winning goal, a graphic of the goal for Christmas, a framed picture of it. That's how much I must go on about that game. Well, if you remember, and you know, I know the Reading fans listening to this will, but you know, the last 10 games that season, we just could not get a win. You know, we were drawing games, and it was a team which had gone to the playoff final, had the disappointment of that. Mentally and physically were drained, and we just could not get over the line in that season. And it came to the last game of the season at Brentford, where we needed a draw. And yet there was tension and pressure on it, but they're the games you want to be involved in. And not only want to be involved in, you want to come out of them and have played well as a team, individually and as a team, and come out on the winning side or the victorious side in terms of the overall situation. Another tense affair. Obviously, Steve Coppell, manager of Brentford, from right there. Steve Sidwell playing for Brentford against. I was up against him in midfield, which was interesting. But never forget the goal. And when that final whistle went, you know, what a feeling, and you know, of sheer relief, really, because when you've lost the playoff final the year before, the feeling of relief and the celebrations in front of our fans, and not only that, when we got back to the Medeski Stadium, you know, was a night we'll all never forget.
Everyone will remain touched by Kuro, but the header before was also quite important. Was that? How do you remember that moment? Have won the header, then Kuro wouldn't be through goal.
I remember it really well. You know, ADV Vash free kick, and just a flick on, and Kuro did what Kuro does. You know, Kuro's a very good player. You know, I went on to sign him as a manager at Colchester. And, you know, I love Kuro. I love playing with him because, obviously, you know, he wasn't big. He wasn't particularly quick. He had limitations in his all-round game. But I'd run for Kuro because you knew if he got one chance, he'd take it. And he was a great player to have in your team because, you know, you're only as good as your goal scorers, and Kuro was absolutely clinical when he got the opportunities.
Yeah, I suppose almost partly maybe thanks to that moment, you've been voted as, I think, I can't remember what year this was now, but voted previously as the best central midfielder of all time at Reading. And to be fair, if we had that vote again today, you'd certainly be in with a really, really good shout of being the favourite to win it. So, and you know, you also got a testimonial, which we'll talk about in a second, but these rewards and having, you know, the recognition that you kind of receive towards the end of your time at the club and after your time at the club, the one is, how do they mean a lot to you? Are they something that you, are they almost as good as the promotions and stuff like that?
Yeah, without doubt. You know, my time at Reading, you know, you'll never forget it. My three children were all born in Reading. We lived in right in the town where, you know, quite often now players commute and they don't live in the town. And, you know, I lived there, was a real part of the community. And, you know, I just always felt it was great to be part of that transition from Elm Park to Medeski Stadium. Always gave my all. I wanted to get into the top 10 all-time appearance makers for the club. That was kind of a goal I had in my mind, and, you know, I got there. It's just some great memories, and the lads I played with in that era, you know, they're still my mates to this day. And you know, you stay mates with those people because, you know, you had a lot of honesty around you on the pitch. And when you have success with a group of players, those are the lads you stay friends with later on in your career.
The testimonial game itself remains one of the most star-studded evenings in club history. What are your memories of having the likes of Gezer and John Barnes turn out for you, and Jeff Hopkins coming over from Australia as a surprise? How was that for you?
Yeah, no, it was a memorable night for myself and my family. And, you know, thanks Sue Roberts, as I always do, who ran the testimonial for me, who's a very good friend of mine still, and the testimonial committee who worked so hard to put that night together. And Gazza, you know, the story with Gazza is that, you know, we were kind of piecing together the opposition ourselves, and I spoke to Chris Waddle, and he said, look, you know, I'll have a word with Gazza for you. I'll get him to play. And I knew that would be a great draw. So, he agreed to play. And, you know, the night before, he was in Glasgow at the dinner, And one of my neighbours in Reading, Chris Donnelly, I said, look, Chris, I said, I'm going to hire you a car. I want you to drive up and bring him back down the next day because, you know, we'd sold a lot of tickets and a lot of them was, you know, because Gazza was coming into Medeski Stadium and I wanted to make sure he was there. So Chris drove up the night before, booked him a hotel room. And the next day I rang him up and I said, Chris, have you got him in the car? And he said, no, he's not with me. I said, Chris, what do you mean? He said, no, he's behind me with Jimmy Fivebellies. And he followed him all the way back down and we got him there, you know. But what a great fellow. And, you know, Gazza was going the next night to play in another testimonial in Southampton. He stayed up with us in the hotel, having a drink with all the lads, everybody. And, you know, what a terrific fella. But so many stories, you know, I could practically speak to for just an hour just on the build up to that testimonial and all the what we had to do to get that team together. So it was a memorable night for myself and my family. And I like to think that all the supporters who were there had a terrific night.
Yeah, definitely. The idea, I suppose, Gazza is someone who's sort of, you know, iconic status has only really grown over the years. And I know that over the lockdown, everything like Euro 96 videos and all that sort of stuff, again, replayed when we didn't have football in the summer. So, yeah, no, to have a player like that is amazing. And I wanted to ask you as well and talk about something else that personally for me, probably my favourite Reading chant is Five Parkinsons to the tune of 12 Days of Christmas. And this, how, you know, your familiarity, when did you perhaps first hear this? And also, have your family and friends ever sung it to you? And if not, why not?
Yeah, I can't remember when it first kind of emerged. I really can't. But yeah, no, it was great to hear the supporters singing it, and it always gives you a lift, you know, when you're on the pitch and you hear the supporters getting behind you as an individual. And no, my family haven't sang it to us. I'll ask them later why not. I'll tell them you've asked the question.
And how was returning to the club as Brentford boss? We spoke during the FA Cup quarterfinal in 2015. And what went wrong on that night for your team?
Well, if you remember, we'd drawn the home leg and probably had the best chance to win it. But it was a tough game. Steve Clark, I thought, did a really good job the way he set his team up. And the game, for TV reasons, was put onto a Monday night. And
always an utterly terrible decision that was.
Yeah, I mean, which, you know, when you look at it, you know, for Bradford and Reading, but for Bradford in particular, one of the biggest games in the club's history, to have to play it 2 days after an important league game. And the problem we had, that we were still in the mix in the league and we had to go to Notts County and get a result. You know, it was important. I couldn't rest everybody. I maybe made one or two changes, but Reading, from my memory, made a lot of changes on the Saturday. And sometimes supporters don't kind of really get this, but when teams have longer to prepare, you see it in the Premiership now where a team will have a week to prepare for a game when the other team's been in the Champions League or something, it does make a difference. And I felt it was very, very unfortunate for us. But Reading were a good side. You know, they had an excellent manager in Steve Clark, who doesn't surprise me how well he's done at Scotland. Very, very well detailed, organised. And unfortunately for us, it wasn't to be on the night and we didn't perform. I think that was the big thing. We didn't perform anywhere near what we had done in previous rounds at Chelsea and home to Sunderland and other games.
Yeah, and just to add on to that as well, actually, as the return to the Medeski, how was that for you? Obviously, it's going to be a special night anyway, but the reception you got from the fans and everything, how was that?
Yeah, it was great to come back. You know, that was great. And as you can imagine, you know, my whole family came down for the night. So that the occasion of that was good. But, you know, I want to win and I want the team to play well and be given the right platform to be able to do that. So it was tainted a bit afterwards because, you know, I didn't feel that we're given the right opportunity and we didn't do ourselves justice because of that.
Yeah, and, you know, we spoke earlier about you know, all of the times at Reading and everything like that. However much you want to answer this question is entirely up to you. But I know that previously, I think it's about late 2018, you were linked with the Reading job while in charge of Bolton, which obviously you didn't take up. And I wonder just to how serious a link that was, and whether, you know, that the idea of returning to Reading, I suppose, you know, it's something that a lot of fans have always held as a real possibility, something that they really like to see. And I wonder how that is for you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'd had some talks with Reading, but it just wasn't to be at the time. You know, I was under contract, and sometimes there can be difficulties which you can't be overcome. And you know, the Reading owners, you know, in the end went for somebody else. But yeah, of course, that, you know, when I left Reading to go to Colchester to learn my trade as a manager, in my thoughts, I thought, you know, one day, hopefully I'll get the opportunity to come back and manage the club. Now, it hasn't happened today, but, you know, I've had some great clubs I've managed as well, and I've enjoyed that side of my career just as much as the playing side.
Yeah, and in the end, the question, do you still have connections to Reading, and do you follow how the club is doing, maybe with a bit more intention like you do with others?
Yeah, I think when you played, you know, so long for a club, you always have a look at the results and games and want them to do well. And I've got a lot of friends in Reading, you know, a lot of people I keep in touch with. And like I said earlier, my three kids were all born in Reading. And yeah, I've got a lot of connections with the area and always, you know, look forward to going back and seeing the old friends and some of the old players, you know, Jilksy, you know, Keith McPherson, you know, I socialised with obviously prior to lockdown. It seems a long time since any of us met anyone. Andy Williams, you know, spoke to the other day. Dylan Kerr, I spoke to, you know, Jeff Hopkins a couple of weeks ago as well. So, you know, I keep in touch with a lot of the lads and, you know, we're always watching out for each other.
You also mentioned your three kids. Do they have also a special relation to Reading Football Club?
Yeah, I mean, obviously they were quite young when I left. But my eldest son, George, who's now 25, you know, he remembers, you know, me playing and following to the games home and away. So he remembers it a lot more, you know, particularly that the memory they've got is when we came back from drawing at Brentford. And, you know, if you remember, the game was on a live screen at the Medeski Stadium because we could only get so many tickets. So
yeah, I was there.
Yeah, they're all waiting outside for the coach to come back. And so they remember those times and obviously the testimonial.
Phil, thank you very much for coming on tonight. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you about all these things. I'm sure, you know, there's hundreds of games and everything like that we can talk about. But we'll let you go. And thank you very much for coming on tonight.
No, it's an absolute pleasure, gents. Thank you very much.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.